This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. One side effect of this quarantine, especially for a lot of parents, has been a growing understanding and appreciation for the incredibly difficult job teachers do every day. Coincidentally, today is the start of Teacher Appreciation Week. We wanted to take part in the occasion by talking to some teachers. And today's show is live, so we want to hear from you, too. If you're a parent who has a question or comment for teachers around the state, or if you are a teacher who's been working hard to adjust during all of this, let us know. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we will do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me on the phone is Kathy Bullington, an elementary school art teacher in Bedford, Indiana. Kathy, thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And also on the phone is John Hurley. John is a career and technical education teacher at South Spencer High School, which is in Rockport, Indiana, down near the Kentucky border. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
Kathy, can you tell us about what you teach and who your students are?
I teach elementary art. I have students that are in grade levels K through 5, and I actually travel to 3 different schools within our school corporation.
You travel around? What's your commute like under normal circumstances, I suppose?
I get to spend a whole day at each school. So I spend 2 days at one, 2 days at one, and then on Fridays I head out to a more rural school. It's about 20 minutes from my house.
How has your teaching changed since the quarantine went into effect? Are you doing your class over the internet in some way?
We really can't. We're one-to-one with tech from middle school through high school, but the elementary school students, we aren't. So we have choice boards where they can choose different little mini lessons posted online. And also the schools have been printing out packets of those choice boards, where parents can pick them up and do those activities at home with our kids.
And how much then have you gotten to see your students?
Have not gotten to see my students much at all. There are a few of the teachers that are the homeroom teachers who have some students that join them in Google Meet, and those teachers have been really good about inviting some of the specialist teachers into their class meetings so we can join in. So I've got to see a few of them online.
Yeah, and I guess internet access is different from phone. Most people have phone now. Have you been able to speak to any of your teachers or any of your students over the phone? What kind of one-on-one have you had?
Not really, because I teach art. I see all those kids, so I have a couple hundred. So that makes it really difficult for me to have those kind of conversations with people. I've emailed parents. One thing that we've tried to do to help out the specialist teachers have a little more contact is we started a Facebook group, and we've had some interactions with parents and students on there, and that's helped a little bit, but not as much. It's not the same as getting to see those kids live and have them tell me about their work. That's one of the big joys of teaching art, is when the kids want to tell you the story about what they've created, and you get to see their mind going through all the creative process that they've gone through. That's what's exciting about art, and that's what I'm really missing right now.
John, can you tell us what career and technical education is?
So some of the classes we have at the high school level, we have construction, manufacturing, transportation, robotics, and within those courses, we teach skills such as plumbing, carpentry, welding, electricity, small engines, and AutoCAD drafting.
And you teach at high school. What's your class like? How many students do you have?
I have classes that range anywhere from 12 to 25 within that, and we have a 7-period day at our high school.
And so then how have things changed for you since this started? Specifically, I guess, in how you're teaching students, are you doing a lot of video calls with them?
One thing we've done, my projects I've extended have been doing career research, so they're actually looking at future jobs in areas in which they have interest. So that's really how I transitioned it. It's difficult. It's impossible to actually be teaching the things I'm used to in the class and doing that online remotely.
Hmm. Kathy, are there any issues with some of your students not having internet access? How common is that in your area?
It's very common. We have I live in Bedford, and so Bedford is kind of a bigger city, but we have very rural areas that are part of our school corporation, and some places they do not have cable, they do not have internet, and some of those students, their parents are driving them over to the schools where they have Wi-Fi hotspots set up, and they're sitting in the parking lot and using them. And that's also true for some of our teachers that live out in the more rural areas. They're having to drive in and sit in the school parking lot to do some of their work. But now that some of the school buildings are open to a limited number of people, they can go in and do some work from their classroom to try and maintain that contact. But it's difficult. Mm.
Some creative solutions for kids without internet. We're talking about Teacher Appreciation Week with two rural Indiana teachers. We have Kathy Bullington, an elementary school art teacher in Bedford, from Bedford, Indiana. And we also have John Hurley, a career and technical education teacher at South Spencer High School in Rockport, Indiana, on the phone with us. John, do you know how many students at your school don't have internet access at home?
And this has been several years ago. We actually had done a survey, and around about a fifth of them that didn't have it at that point in time. And just adding on to some of the previous comments, we're in a similar situation where we do have a fairly high number of students and teachers that don't have access at home. We've been able to make use of some community libraries that have their Wi-Fi left on. And I'll see students that are out there in vehicles, you know, doing the work that way and submitting their assignments, you know, outside our local libraries.
What about teachers? Do some teachers not have internet access?
Yes, that was one I know personally. You know, my access is solely from my phone. The area I live in does not have any availability for broadband out there.
Wow.
We have a limited number that can come into the building, and I've been able to take advantage of actually being able to come into the building.
So how much of an obstacle is that? People around there not having internet?
On the teacher's end, it's something where we have to be prepared ahead of time and then ready to. We have office hours, and I maintain those. So I have access at that point in time. I check my email either from my phone or I'm in the building in case there are issues that the students are having, and then I respond to that.
Kathy, art is a unique subject for school because it can require a lot of supplies, specific supplies. Do not enough students have the supplies they need at home? How do you adapt to that?
That's also been a struggle because some kids do not have supplies. Their parents may not be able to afford supplies. And in some cases, parents, don't like the mess or they're nervous about the mess. So we've had to change the kind of lessons that we suggest to being things that they might have at home, like pencil, paper, crayons. We've been posting some alternative activities in the Facebook group for people that might have some additional things like paint or putting up recipes for making your own watercolor paint using food coloring. Just trying to find some creative ways to help parents do things with their kids.
Have you explored ideas about just like general creativity? Have you reached a point where you've thought, have you felt short on ideas at any certain point in this process?
One thing that I think helps is that in our school corporation, we have several art teachers and we talk to each other. We share ideas. We've gotten together on Google Meet ourselves to brainstorm, and that's helped a lot. Without my fellow art teachers, I would feel kind of lost and not sure of what to do, but we've done a lot of brainstorming, and they're great to work with.
It seems like the biggest thing you miss is the one-on-one with students. I guess what is the main thing you're not able to do as an art teacher because you're not in the room with the students?
I miss showing them how to do new things with new supplies. And, you know, I can't help hold their hand and show them how to hold a paintbrush better. Or, you know, we aren't getting to do clay. Some of them missed out on getting to do ceramics this year because school stopped before we got to that point. And that's certainly something they cannot do at home. And that's so exciting for them. But a lot of things with art are hands-on. You may have to pick up the kids' artwork and show them, well, if you change this just a little bit, and demonstrate right to them. And I can't, you can't do that. Not even with just a video. You can't have that one-on-one watching them work and making suggestions to them as they work.
Do you feel like when we return to normal, whenever that may be, you're going to feel like you have to compensate for the things that you weren't able to do during this time?
Definitely. I know one of the first things I want to do is make sure the kids that didn't get a chance to do clay get that opportunity. Since it's a very hands-on activity and it's something they love and something that usually kids keep forever. I have students from 30 years ago, I'll see them in the supermarket. I still have my clay. I love it. And, you know, I'm worried about some kids missing out on because it's an exciting thing for them.
John, are there certain elements of your lessons that you just can't do over the internet?
Yes. I have a shop right now that has a lot of partially completed student projects in it. And so they're used to having that hands-on experience with hand tools, power tools, and that's something that just it cannot be conveyed in an online setting.
And do you think that there are solutions to some of those problems that you have not been able to try yet?
As far as actually being able to have them in a shop environment, again, that's just not going to happen with an online course, and it ends up being a safety thing, even if they want to have access to power tools, something like that at home. But again, you just cannot get the same experience that online as you can within those actual shop courses.
Two teachers talking about big challenges on this Teacher Appreciation Week, and we'll keep talking with our guests after a quick break. As always, we would love your questions and comments on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. We also have a voicemail that you can leave a message on, 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're finding out how teachers are adapting during the pandemic, and we would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from. 866-476-3881 is our voicemail line. 866-476-3881. On the phone, we're joined again by Kathy Bullington, an elementary school art teacher in Bedford, Indiana, and John Hurley, a career and technical education teacher at South Spencer High School in Rockport, Indiana. Kathy, how much communication have you had with parents throughout all this?
I've had a few emails and a few conversations on Facebook with some, but not near what I would like to see. I think some of them are really focused on the homeroom teachers for the kids and making sure that they have a lot of contact with them. As a specialist teacher in that area, I think sometimes we get put a little bit on the back burner because parents are overwhelmed right now. They have a lot that they're being asked to do. And sometimes if they have to email, you know, five teachers, that may seem overwhelming. So most of them are keeping contact with homeroom teachers. And some of those homeroom teachers have forwarded me some things that some of the parents have sent them about kids' artwork, which I appreciate.
Would you say, though, that your contact with parents nowadays during the pandemic is still more than you would otherwise have during normal circumstances?
No, it's definitely less. It's a lot less because when parents come in school, you see them. You see them at activities at school. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of casual conversations. Being out in the community, I run into a lot of parents, and we talk, and not getting to do that now.
Are there common concerns you've heard from parents about what their role should be?
Definitely. I think parents are a little confused about exactly how it should work, how much screen time their kids should have. That's been a big concern. They feel like their kids are getting a lot more screen time now. And how many hours it takes for some kids to do their work. They're like, is this the normal amount that it would take them to do these assignments? And I think some kids are missing out on some supports that they get at school. Some of them get some reading assistance if they need it, especially at the elementary level. We have kids that are deaf and hard of hearing that get some additional support. Some of them have behavior issues that they get additional supports for that come out when they're trying to struggle through some of their homework. So I think parents are having to deal with those things now and seeing that more. And they're wondering if they're doing the right thing, and they're trying to do all they can.
Tamara on Facebook says, I teach first grade in a high-need Title I school. This pandemic is heartbreaking and shows the true inequity of e-learning. So many of our students have little to no access to online learning. We've been making, copying, and delivering work packets and food. I just want to have my kids back. Kathy, based on some of your comments from the first segment, it seems like that probably resonates with you a little bit. Would you say it does?
Oh, yeah, I would say ditto and amen to all she's doing.
Mm. John, this has all happened pretty suddenly for everybody, of course, but how prepared were teachers at your school for making this change to remote teaching?
Well, one thing, we had actually been doing e-learning for some of our snow makeup days previously, so many of the teachers actually had some sense of what this would be on a very limited basis. You know, the difficulty has been doing something that normally would be a day or two and then extending that to a full quarter of the year.
Kathy, how was the plan for teachers formed? Were there just a lot of meetings right away to figure out what might work best?
Yes. The admin team started meeting right away and coming up with ideas and suggestions. And I know that they were also meeting with some of the teacher groups and talking to them about, you know, how can we do this? How can we make this work? We hadn't done any of the e-learning before. So the first go round, some things worked well and some didn't when we were putting out packets. So they met again. And after hearing some things from parents and from teachers, they made some adjustments. And the next couple of go-rounds, I think things went a lot smoother because we were trying to learn as we go how to do this and how to make this work better for everyone.
Have things changed much in how you're working around this since the start of the quarantine? I mean, were you maybe doing things differently the first week and then learned how to adjust as it went?
We didn't make big adjustments. It was like tweaking it a little bit to make sure that the instructions that we were sharing with parents were a little bit clearer to help them, and also making sure that all the different grade level teams and different studies of instruction teams, like the art area, make sure that we were all talking to each other more and sharing more information to make sure we were all on the same page.
John, I have a lot of family members who have worked in education. Teachers talk to other teachers, especially during normal circumstances. Have you talked to any fellow teachers? And if so, how are the other teachers you work with doing in general?
Both people they're doing okay managing what they can. I think as far as in school, what we've all talked about is missing that connection we do have to the students when they are here in the classroom. My wife's also a teacher. My mother was a teacher for 42 years, so I am fortunate myself to have that structure there as far as being able to get ideas. And, you know, we all know what's going on in the normal sense of education. And so that's been helpful for me personally. Again, the other teachers in our building, it's just been a big adjustment not being here on a daily basis or being able to interact directly with the students in the classroom.
What are some things, I guess, that have made this situation easier for some of your fellow teachers? I know not everyone's in the same situation as you, but has anyone brought anything up like that?
I know one thing we are doing at least weekly staff meetings through Google Meet. And so that's been some way that we do see everybody kind of in a group then. And a lot of them we have done several email chains around as far as some, you know, maybe a student's having an issue. So we do still kind of meet in that way to help out the students and provide some similarity to what we would have had under normal circumstances.
And what about things that have, I mean, aside from the obvious, there are so many obvious answers to this question, but things that have generally made things more difficult for teachers there?
The obvious one.
The obvious jumps out right away, doesn't it? Kind of dominates.
Not having the students there. Sometimes the maybe some issues you don't always think would occur, or maybe a student that does well in the classroom environment may be struggling with the instructions on an assignment because they're used to having that essentially acted out in a way. But then when they have to go through and do a lot more on their own without some other experience in there or without another student collaborating with them, that's some difficulties I've seen with some students that maybe I didn't necessarily expect that.
Kathy, what about other teachers you work with? How much does this situation vary for them depending on what they teach and other factors like the age of their students? Is everyone sort of figuring out how their specific class should be handled?
I think everybody has a different approach that they're finding works best for them and with their kids, because teachers really do. They know their kids. They know their parents. They know their little community that they have and how they also prefer to interact with them. So I think for some teachers, it worked out really well, especially some that are more tech savvy. Some of our teachers that aren't as tech savvy, I think, are struggling with this a little bit. Well, how do I do all this tech and make it work? But we've been trying to turn to each other for help and assistance. We also have some really good tech people that support our staff, and they've been wonderful about answering questions and trying to provide lessons online for some of us that need a little bit more help. But it's been a struggle. And then, of course, some of us have our own health issues that have made us a little worried and scared and stressed in this situation, or have family members that we're worried about. So I think that's another layer to this. We're trying to do all this stuff for our kids, but also for our families. And I know some people have had more struggles with that.
John, let's see. John, for students who have had some trouble making these adjustments, have you and other teachers been able to help them?
I don't know. One thing, we had actually been keeping a list of students that had not submitted some of the work, and we were able to make sure we contact them to see, you know, is that a technology issue? Is that an understanding issue? I'd made phone calls to the parents on those myself for all my classes if there was anything missing or if they'd indicated a need. I've also, in fact, one of my students lives fairly close to my house. That was one where I actually did a visit, talked to the parent in the driveway and made sure that student was able to get done what they needed in order to not only finish my class and get that grade, but also with a couple other classes that student had struggles with. So that's one way we've tried to reach out to those students that had some additional needs.
We are talking about Indiana's teachers on this, a very, very strange beginning to Teacher Appreciation Week under very different circumstances. Indeed, we are on the phone with Kathy Bullington, an elementary school art teacher in Bedford, Indiana, and John Hurley, a career and technical education teacher at South Spencer High School in Rockport, Indiana. And again, it is Teacher Appreciation Week. And I mean, I guess, John, could we compare what Teacher Appreciation Week might look like under normal circumstances versus right now? Do you feel, I mean, I know your job is much harder now,
But do you feel that the tone of teacher appreciation in general has elevated? People now know the kinds of things that you go through all the time, and they also know, they can imagine at least, the kind of adaptations that they've had to, that you have had to make, and the kind of challenges that's brought along with it. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, for the most part, within our community, they have been supportive of the educators, of what we're trying to do, what we are doing in the community to be able to continue to get these students some sort of education experience. And you know, I always want to emphasize that no matter what we do, as good as we could make e-learning, it's never going to be the same or comparable to what we can do in the classroom. So I do want to emphasize that. And again, most of our community members have been, we've worked together, we work with parents, and there's been a pretty good collaboration and understanding within our county.
Kathy, what about you? Do you feel, I guess, more appreciated now than maybe you would had this all not happened?
Oh, I really don't know, because usually when it's teacher appreciation, we're at school and we celebrate, and we have parents bringing in, you know, food for us, or the kids will give us a little gift, and we have different things all throughout the week. And we don't have that now. And I never thought about missing that, but you really do. It's not the same as that in person. I've had people email and post on Facebook saying we appreciate our teachers. But to me, this year, we also have to appreciate our parents for being teachers, because they're having to help share this workload. So I've been telling them thank you as well. It's different. And the way that we work together has really changed. So I'm going to give a big shout out to parents, because they're having to try and do this. And I know they're working hard and trying to do it as best that they can, because they care about their kids too, and probably even more than we do. But we all care, and that's why we're trying to do it together.
Well, Kathy, what do you think kids need the most right now to help them learn as well as they could in normal conditions?
My number one thing that I would suggest to parents is make sure your kids are reading. Get out some books, have them read, have them try to do what they can each day. If they're stressing, you know what, they're probably stressing about the world and things that are going on that they may not even be able to express for the little kids. So let them have a break. Let them go play outside. Let them play for a while and then come back to it. And parents, I don't want them to stress either. I know they're doing all they can, but it's not the same for kids. It's changed their schedules. It's changed everybody's schedules. And I think that's been a struggle, adjusting to that. But as long as they're doing what they can each day, I think that's wonderful. They just need a good mixture of everything. Do a little bit of this and then switch it up and do a little bit of that, especially for the little kids who can't sit there and do 2 hours worth of math in a row. That's not going to work for your kid. If they're struggling, have them take a break, play a little bit, and then come back.
John, have you learned anything? Have you learned anything about teaching through this experience, I guess?
We always know educators have to be adaptable, and I think this has shown that is one of the most true statements out there, that we really went from a Friday when we were in school to the next week, and then the next week we weren't there, and we had to really put together those plans very quickly. So the flexibility on our part is tremendous. And I know, again, with the parents, that's something where, you know, they're learning too how to do this. They're learning that part. They're having to be flexible. They're having their schedules upended. And so that's really the things I've seen, is that we have to be able and willing to work together and come to an understanding of what is needed for the best outcomes for those students.
Kathy, same question. What has this taught you about teaching?
I'm going to say some of the same things you said: being flexible, learning how to work well with your school community, your parents, your students, your fellow teachers, and making adjustments as you need it. And I think teachers everywhere have been showing that we'll do whatever we need to try and do what's best for the kids and help them as much as we can. And it's taken a lot of out-of-the-box thinking and trying to just be creative and just keep struggling through.
Kathy, are the schools you work with thinking long-term right now? How much are you planning for, or how much can you plan for looking forward?
I know that they've been meeting and talking about how things are going to look different, different things with cleaning and different procedures for when we come to school, how when we enter in during the day. I know that the school nurses have been meeting and talking about some different protocols for if they have a fever and things like that. So it's definitely going to be a change and be different for kids. We're not sure exactly what it's going to look like. I think some of that's going to depend on how things go over the summer in our area with the COVID going on. It's definitely going to be different.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to talk with us today. Elementary school art teacher Kathy Bullington, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And career and technical education teacher John Hurley, we really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
Up next, we'll talk with officials at the Indiana Department of Education to find out how teachers across the state have found solutions to very new problems. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on teachers in Indiana. Today is the first day of Teacher Appreciation Week. And we've spent the show so far talking to teachers, two teachers, about how they've adapted in recent weeks. Joining me now are two officials from the Indiana Department of Education. Robin LeClaire is the department's chief academic officer. Robin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. Celebrate teachers this week.
Indeed. And Adam Baker is press secretary for the Indiana Department of Education. Adam, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Like we mentioned, it's the first day of Teacher Appreciation Week. Robin, can you tell us about Teacher Appreciation Week? I mean, it's a national thing. How does Indiana take part?
Yeah, so we have a social media campaign going on, hashtag Indiana Loves Teachers. So we have a lot of tweets and some social media things going out to show teachers appreciation. Many schools are doing a lot of different things, including taking signs to the yards of their teachers, sending handwritten letters and cards to show appreciation. We have put together at the Department of Education a video that has been released this morning on Twitter, where we had several superintendents from around the state send in thank you messages, as well as Dr. McCormick and Boomer from the Pacers, and our Indians as well. Mascot joined in so that we could celebrate teachers and tell them how important they are to us. So that video is floating around out there as well.
And we've been seeing an awful lot of positive messages to teachers in the last few weeks. And, you know, it seems like a lot of it is, of course, because some parents with kids at home are gaining a new appreciation for all the hard work that teachers do. Have you noticed that as well?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, realizing what teachers go through to help their students learn and grow and see, deal with their frustrations and their struggles and bring them along in not only academically, but socially and emotionally. And parents are dealing with all those things at home now. I know I personally have a high school daughter, and I'm gaining a whole new appreciation for teachers teaching things like dual credit chemistry. Definitely not my strong point. So trying to understand how teachers are adapting their styles to work with kids and understanding how parents are seeing that firsthand.
And what effect do you think that this support has had on teachers, especially while they're figuring out how to work in such difficult circumstances?
You know, teachers are going through a lot. There's a grieving process to having had the school year end abruptly, not having a chance to say goodbye to their students. Teachers become very attached to their students during the year. They spend probably as many waking hours with their students during a school year as their families do. So to abruptly have that end, have no opportunity to say goodbye, and to know some of your students are at home struggling, that is a grieving process for teachers. And so to have society rally around them, cheer them on, recognize the fact that they are champions. They're champions for their students. I'm sure it's helping their social emotional wellness. But teachers are going through a lot. They're doing their job as far as preparing lessons, meeting with students. And then they have their own families at home that they're dealing with the same kinds of things everybody's dealing with right now, including trying to get essential resources we need, our food, our groceries, take care of their own kids and their learning. So it's a lot for teachers to go through. So just a simple card, smile, thank you, video, whatever the case may be, it's important.
Adam, we talked to a couple teachers in the show today, and we've heard from some others since this all started, but can you give us a sense for how schools and teachers around the state have adapted?
Yeah, well, I mean, e-learning has been in Indiana for about a decade, but what's interesting is it used to be utilized just for snow days. So when you are a district, and even if you're an educator and there's a requirement that maybe once every few months during the winter times, you might have to, you know, go home and get on a computer and Zoom all your students and digitally sort of have that interaction. And then that becomes your daily routine. I mean, as Robin hit on it, it's definitely an adjustment. And it's one of the largest things we've heard from educators is not only having that face-to-face with their students, but even the little things like knowing whether or not a student is struggling or having an issue at home, being able to see that on their face, being able to walk up next to their desk, ask them how that day is going. You know, educators really do get in the business for that interaction with their students. And now that they're physically removed from that, it's been hard on them. But we've seen schools really rise to the occasion. I know one of our goals has been to provide districts and educators with every resource we can to make this, I don't want to say as easy as possible, but to help lighten that load a bit. And educators are doing a phenomenal job. I have one friend of mine who's a colleague and teaches band. And I tell you what, 30 students with instruments on Zoom, that is quite the environment, but he makes it work, and they've been getting along and enjoying it, you know, to the best of their ability that they can enjoy it during this time.
Wow. Those sound like really, really big challenges, especially the one-on-one kind of challenge, being able to see the student and see whether or not they're struggling. What have some of the other big challenges been for teachers across Indiana? What stood out?
I definitely think the technology, right? So just that we hear about students who have access. I mean, we have educators who may not be equipped at home exactly for that. We have an individual who works for our department whose high school children are teachers, and they did not have the technology capability at home, but she did. So they've actually been living out this environment with her, which has obviously caused some sort of disruption in her life and her workflow. And so I think that, you know, just like Robin said, a lot of the things that students deal with or even parents deal with, you know, we forget that educators are also parents, that they also, you know, deal with those same struggles, that they also have to create a physical space at home to do this work. They also have to find means of you know, satisfaction themselves and feel good at the end of the day. And you know, if there's one thing we know about educators, I would say it's also that emotional burden, right? So an educator always wants to do best for their students. And when their students are struggling, and especially during this time, if it's something they cannot fix or help with immediately, whether it is even a technology glitch or some other sort of uncontrolled, unforeseen obstacle, honestly, at the end of the day, our educators bear that burden. They really do. They go, I mean, they close their computer at the end of the day, and they know that that's something that even though they know they couldn't solve it, they wish they could have. So, I mean, that's a burden for them as well.
I also think, if I can add to what Adam's saying, I think a huge challenge for teachers right now is just being able to adapt those lessons that they may have taught before, lessons that they would feel completely confident in the classroom, differentiating for the different needs and the different levels of ability that students have in the classroom, trying to gauge that and then modify lessons and create lessons that can engage students virtually and address their specific needs to meet them where they are and take them to the next level, and then assess that growth and see where we need to go back. Teaching is a science. There's an art to it, but it's also a science of looking at data and responding to that data. And it's very hard for teachers to collect that data right now. And that's frustrating, because when you can't do your job at full throttle the way that you're used to doing it and being the professional that you are and have been trained to be, and having to, you know, maybe turn that over to parents or to kids themselves, that can be very frustrating and difficult. So I would say that too is a big challenge for teachers right now.
Yeah. And Adam, what I've seen so far that's been really impressive to me have been some of the solutions that teachers have come up with to address some of, you know, the myriad of challenges that they're faced by the pandemic. What kinds of solutions have you seen that have impressed you or surprised you?
Well, I tell you what, the food delivery has been massive. We've seen districts all across the state, right? So we have vulnerable populations who are on free and reduced lunch. And number one, you know, from the beginning, we saw districts that maybe have less than 50% population. And for a while, the USDA, they didn't allow a waiver for that. And so we saw schools, you know, very creatively work within that, to where the point when USDA finally did issue that waiver, and one of the requirements was that schools had to ensure they were addressing that most vulnerable population. And so we've seen a lot of districts get very creative in how, whether they've set up food for their grab and go stations. We know some districts that have set that up so that it's only once a week. You only have, you know, an hour or two window. You can get there, you can get food for the entire week. We've seen these same districts get creative in their first care providers that are in those same areas, and their frontline workers that have helped deliver food. We've seen districts that have done it on a bus, have delivered food on buses. And, you know, when we talk about technology, we had several districts that were working on this before, but truly instituted it when this kicked off. You know, we talk about sort of how do you access the internet. We had districts that were parking buses with Wi-Fi capabilities in areas of their town, in areas of their townships and counties where Wi-Fi wasn't available for students to have access to. So we've seen a lot of creativity come about in districts getting to yes and creating those solutions for their student population.
We're talking
additionally, I think there is also some creativity with teachers actually driving around. I know an art teacher in Noblesville put together packets of art supplies for her students who had special needs and needed specific art supplies to do projects that she would have them do. So she put those packages together, she drove around, and she dropped those on the doorsteps of those students. There's a teacher in Warren Township who was driving around, getting out of his car, using sidewalk chalk to do math lessons on the sidewalk with some students who were struggling to understand some work. So actual, like, nitty gritty teachers, boots on the ground, out doing what they do best, which is teaching kids and meeting the needs of kids.
We're talking to Robin LeClaire, Indiana Department of Education's Chief Academic Officer. We also have Adam Baker on the line. He's Press Secretary for the Indiana Department of Education. Robin, what do you think has made the biggest difference for teachers being able to continue their work and continue helping students learn? I mean, off the top of my head, it seems like video calls have played the major role there in a lot of classes.
Absolutely. Some of those platforms that teachers are able to use to meet with students, whether it's Zoom, whether it's Microsoft Teams, whether it is Skype, but a way for them to have that connection, eye-to-eye connection with their students, I know has been a huge help. Schools that were already in a place where they were using some kind of learning management system, an LMS system, I know that's been a tremendous help for them to get assignments out and get them back and get them graded and provide feedback to students. So those things have been a big help for our teachers.
Adam, we talked, of course, about the Wi-Fi buses, and we've heard from some teachers in rural areas that it's been difficult for students without internet access to make those adjustments. Aside from the Wi-Fi buses, which we've already talked about, what is being done or could be done to help people in that situation?
Well, you know, so we've seen, number one, and I don't know off the top of my head, but the lieutenant governor spoke about internet access last week, and through the lieutenant governor's office, I know there is a program that does create funding for that. But what we've actually seen is districts on the ground. So IPS just announced, I believe it was IPS last week, an initiative to help purchase equipment that is needed for their students. And so if there's one thing we've also seen when we talk about, was there any positives? As much as we in education like to talk about solutions, I mean, obviously challenges and limitations exist, but I think that's where educators are set apart in that they embrace those limitations and the challenges and get better. And so what we've seen in the challenges that have been presented through this time is districts have realized this is our limitation and we don't want to ever find ourselves in this position again. So whether it's working with the state to create a solution, whether it's working with our school boards, whether it's seeing what's available around us, either way, let's do what we can to put packages together so moving forward, we can definitely serve our students above and beyond.
Robin, how have some teachers' roles changed since this started? We've heard some stories about teachers going out of their way to check in on students and to make sure they're doing okay.
Absolutely. I think teachers have had to quickly adapt to becoming food service providers. When Adam was talking about all those meals, thousands and thousands and thousands of meals across the state being delivered, teachers are on the front lines of delivering that. School supply providers, counselors, when they're talking to their students and having conferences with their students, they're encountering, you know, that what we sometimes refer to as that secondhand trauma when they're helping students work through their fears when their students have lost family members or family members become ill, lost their jobs. They're dealing with, uncertainty. And so teachers have really become counselors and supporters for their students, which they always have been. I would argue my 14 years in a classroom and 10 years as an administrator, I was a chief cook and bottle washer in addition to all other responsibilities. So teachers are used to that and adapting to that. But I think certainly their role has changed to being more of a cheerleader and more of a support, and probably to families as well, as they're trying to provide families an opportunity to get feedback on their students' academic growth. They're being supportive of families' feelings of grief and loss. You know, when we're talking about graduations being canceled and proms being canceled and athletic seasons that some parents have looked forward to, I know that teachers are adapting to become supporters and helping families and students become more resilient.
Well, and let's talk about some of that direct communication that teachers are kind of having to have with families. They're needing to work more with students' parents now than they might have otherwise had to. How important has that been?
Certainly that parent communication has been multiplied exponentially with needing to communicate on students' progress and also find out what students' needs are and trying to help address those. They're probably talking to parents weekly.
And if I may add, so the retired Indiana's Teacher Association, there was actually two programs that have come out in the past several weeks from them. One was a call and learn hotline where students can call a retired educator and work on sort of math problems, arithmetic, reading, English, any of those. But then the retired Teacher Association also created the ability for parents to call. So there's a mentorship program also where educators and parents can call as well to get advice, to get help, so that, you know, they understand that it's more of a community effort these days to educate our students.
Adam Baker is the Department of Education's press secretary. Adam, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. This is such an important topic, and we love teachers.
Robin LeClaire is Chief Academic Officer for the Indiana Department of Education. Thank you for taking the time today.
Absolutely. And if I can just add #IndianaLovesTeachers.
#IndianaLovesTeachers. Thank you. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow we'll talk about upcoming elections and election campaigns and how they've been impacted by COVID-19. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. In the meantime, I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.